Remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's CCI call on Tuesday, the 20th of December, we have Cheryl Langdon Orr, John Barrett, Steve Del Bianco, Olivier Crépin Leblanc, Paul Redmond, Tobias Mahler. From staff, we have Barry Cobb, Brian Peck, and myself, Gisela Gruber. Noted from Carlos Aguirre, Alex Fukuru, and Margie Milan. If I could also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Also, Rosemary Sinclair and Wendy Seltzer have just joined the call. Thank you very much. Over to you, Barry and Rosemary.
Thanks, Gisela. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, everybody. And yes, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to all. So we've done the roll call. Have we got any thoughts on the agenda?
Yes, Rosemary, this is Barry. Just before I kick off and pronounce the agenda, I'd just like to clarify, Paul Redmond is with ICANN, and he's with the compliance team just listening in to start to get a sense for some of the metrics that we're starting to gather and those kinds of things. So just in case you see him on the call and on the distribution list.
Thanks, Barry, and welcome, Paul.
This is Paul. Thank you.
So with that, just check off on the roll call real quick. Basically, we're going to see if there's any additional items to add to the agenda, take a quick review of our previous meeting's open action items, then our next two, which I've misnumbered on the chat, is to review through some potential new metrics that could be included in our CCI matrix. And then we'll also take a quick review of the draft of the first CCI advice letter as well and any other business. So, Rosemary, I'll turn that over to you, and then when you're ready, we can kind of review through the last week's action items.
Thanks, Barry. So the open action items are, the first point was add pricing to the CCI measures matrix as a function of competition. That one's complete. Second, determine if ICANN can acquire wholesale pricing of domains from registries and if there's an automated method to collect retail prices by registrars. That's the one I think we're going to discussed today, and there's a couple of others. So how did we progress that one?
Rosemary, this is Barry. We met with ICANN Legal last week, and this is still an outstanding item. They'd like to review through some of the details around that. It's probably a fair statement that this data isn't being collected now, but just in terms of There's concerns with about collection of wholesale prices and pricing in general with respect to competition, and so we're just awaiting a response back from legal, and I really don't have much more to offer from that. But hopefully by our January meeting, we'll have a response.
Yes, it's a tricky one, so it will be interesting to see what legal has to say. Are there any comments on that particular issue? Because I know it was of interest to members on the group. No. In that case, the third issue is complete. The fourth issue was with me, and the academic that I was to talk to has gone on leave now until the end of January. So we should just leave that one as a carry forward. Thank you. The next one, Cheryl and Olivia were to chat with Annalisa Roger. Has there been any progress on that one? Olivia?
Thank you, Rosemary, Olivier, for the transcript. I have sent an email to Annalisa. I must admit I actually only sent it yesterday, so no reply yet, but as soon as I do get a reply, I shall inform this group of her reply. What I have done, though, is to have a look at the transcript of the session that took place over in Dakar, And it was a little bit unclear as to what type of metrics would be obtained from what she suggested. But I will pursue an answer for this. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Olivier. The next one, Cheryl, is now I've forgotten the acronym for this WRT review team.
With respect to
significantly interested party, and that's an open one. Is there any comment on that one?
Rosemary, this is Barry. I couldn't recall which working group Cheryl was on, so I just put working group there as hoping that Cheryl would be able to interpret my lack of exploration.
Okay. Understand, Barry. Don't worry. All right, we'll just leave that open until Cheryl's able to join us next time or carry over, whichever nomenclature you like. And the next two are complete. That's great. Okay, so we go back to the agenda proper. And the third item is to discuss John's concern that there should be more to consumer trust, security in the context of things like malware and current quantity of measures. Is there someone on the call who's got the background on this issue?
Well, John's on the call.
Where's John? I can't see him.
I'm not on the, I'm only on the phone. I apologize.
Oh, okay, John. Great. Sorry about that.
I can imagine that. I'm only on the phone talking Lord knows to whom and where they are. My comment was instigated by two things. First of all, I have a concern that if the list of metrics becomes too long, and truthfully, I don't know how long too long is, that it becomes almost impossible then to determine that they're not being met. Now, that may be a strategic thing on our part. I mean, we could put a list of 40 metrics together and assume that on any given day, 25 or 30 of them are going to be met, and it sort of sets aside which are the most important, right? I mean, so priorities as opposed to the length of the list, I think, is important. And my feeling is that the program is better judged by fewer, more important metrics as opposed to as many as we can conjure. However, on the other hand, I do think that there is one missing from the trust side of things. And I've been involved in this for a while, and I'm quite aware of how users will embed all of their hopes and dreams in technologies and matters that have no basis for owning those hopes and dreams. There was a time 10 years ago or so where whatever computer problem you had was the problem of the browser, regardless of the operating system or the manufacturer of the computer. In today's world where we all live online, especially as we've seen with the reliance upon smartphones, the rise of the Android system, which is more susceptible to malware than more closed monitored system such as Apple. I think what we are seeing a concern among consumers that by being online, they are exposing themselves and their data, their computers to malware. And so I know that, so I'm not just offering up a question, I'm also offering up a solution. I know that companies like Symantec and McAfee track this stuff. And so I'm suggesting that perhaps if we were to add in a metric under trust that essentially consumers have confidence that being online is not exposing them to unwarranted liability, that we could look at, you know, Privacy Rights Clearinghouse for data breach data, we could look to McAfee or Symantec for distribution of malware data, and have a couple of hard and fast numbers to suggest that the new GTLD program is inhibiting, encouraging, or is the same as the old system.
Hey, John, this is Steve.
Yeah.
Rosemary had to drop off, asked me to pinch it till she gets back on.
Okay.
So, John, you've identified two potential concerns, the sheer quantity of measures that are currently listed as candidates under consumer trust. And the second is this notion of consumer trust of what happens on the web,
right,
far beyond the scope of the domain name system that ICANN manages. It's a valid concern, but it is a scope question for us. Why don't we take the quantity of measures first? And I don't think anybody on this call would differ from you in this, in the regard that we would like to have fewer measures. It wasn't strategic to have lots. That it was an imaginative suggestion, but we did in fact want to have measures that did the two parts of consumer trust, because consumer trust definition has two aspects, which is registrants and users having confidence in the consistency of name resolution, and there are a few of those. I think I would really say it's the first four measures in the matrix, John, and if you can't see that, those four were the percentage of DNS service availability, percentage of RDDS availability, EPP service availability, and registrar uptime, which I am told is very difficult to measure, registrar uptime. So there are four for that, but there are well over a dozen for the second half of the sentence in metric. It was the degree of confidence among registrants and users that a TLD registry operator is fulfilling their proposed purpose, and that they're complying with ICANN's policies and applicable national laws. And for that, we dove heavily into RPMs, rights protection mechanisms, and looked at the incidence of both complaints and decisions for things like the URS, the UDRP, reach notices of registrars and registries, and also, you know, whether there are registry operators who violated their own contracts. So I agree we have a lot. Where would you think we could begin to cull that list down?
Well, my disadvantage is, and I don't have a copy of it in front of me, and I apologize, but are there any to your, and maybe we can take this offline, but are there any that seem duplicative? Are there any that seem, you know, if we have that number, essentially we don't need this other one or two numbers?
Well, one idea, John, is that we could probably cut the ones that are related to the second half of the definition, we could cut them in half by saying this. For instance, there's two of them in there, one for the percentage of UDRP complaints and the quantity of UDRP decisions after 2011. And those really could be the same, right? We would say the percentage of UDRP complaints and decisions resolved and make that one line. That would make it apparently one less metric, but it's because it's really the same category, it's two different ways to measure UDRP activity.
True.
Now, that might be cosmetic because it would cut the number of rows in half, but it's the same number of metrics when it comes to what we're wanting to measure.
I guess my question is driven by the fact that I would like this to be more than a cosmetic exercise, right?
Okay.
So if I've got 15 measures, you know, which ones, you know, are there seven or eight that I can easily manage to? And if I get to seven or eight, and I've got four or five that are hard for me to meet, can I make the political argument that, hey, look, I've got, you know, 10 of them done, the other five we'll get to?
And who's the you when you're speaking to the first person? Is that ICANN, or is it a registrar or a registrar?
I'm leaving that wide open because, you know, who is it that's going to bear the burden of the review? You know,
I think it's ICANN, because
right.
It's ICANN, the entity who will be reviewed on the basis of consumer trust,
right,
choice and competition in the new TLD program.
You know, and they in turn will, you know, seek to encourage better behavior from the constituencies, right?
Right. And the fact that so many of these are marked easy in terms of ICANN's ability to report them to us, in this particular category of consumer trust, nearly all of them are easy, and a few of them are moderate when it comes to being able to report them.
Right.
Two of them are very difficult to obtain.
Right.
They have to do with a trust survey of consumers,
mm-hmm,
which probably comes closest to your second request, is consumer trust.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to be an outlier on this thing, okay? I felt strongly enough that I wanted to raise the points. I do think that one of the ways that Internet users' confidence in the Internet is undermined is when they wind up with, you know, having their computer become a bot or data get corrupted or stolen. Nobody likes those letters from the credit card companies that say your identity's been, that your credit card's been misused. But, you know, for misuse of data on the Internet, you don't get a letter. You just get misused. And so I thought that if we could, in terms of scope, ICANN is yes, responsible for for the domain name system, but the use of the domain name system is so ubiquitous at this point, not limited to any country, not limited to any culture, not limited to any economic or social group,
yep.
that it becomes important for ICANN to appreciate that the incredible, potentially incredible expansion of the GTLD space is going to create more opportunity for people to do good and more opportunity for people to do bad. And is there any way that we can incorporate measures into this that would help us get a grip on
I was going to turn it back over to Rosemary since she's back online. But John, I would point you to the trust survey.
Mm-hmm.
Sixth element in the consumer trust category.
I got it.
It's a lot like what the Who Is review team under the affirmation did, is they conducted, they had an outside firm conduct a survey of consumer trust trying to focus on with respect to Who Is.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that a lot of the thoughts you have could be steered towards constructing the questions that trust survey would measure.
All right. Well, if that's the sense of the working group, then sure, then I would turn my attention to being a part of helping design that instrument.
Thanks, Steve, and thanks, John. I think you raised some important points, particularly in terms of a philosophy that we have shared of having a focused number of actionable measures to really make this work make a difference. Wendy is in the queue.
Thanks. And my question is, if we're considering expanding the definition of trust in this way, I think we really have to ask ourselves how it's related to trust in the domain name system and related to new TLDs. What it sounds as though we would be measuring is sort of simply an activity level problem, that as more people use the Internet, there's more bad stuff, and there's also more good stuff. What does that tell us about the new domain name system? I would posit nothing. So rather than giving us metrics for how well we're doing in managing an orderly domain name system, I think that would be sort of feeding into various interpretations of whether the Internet itself is good or bad, which is simply not what I think we're able to do or trying to do here.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Wendy. I think that's a clear statement of the scope issue for this work. Barry?
Thank you, Rosemary. This is Barry. In some ways, I do agree with John, and it's really a double-edged sword. And might I recommend that as we move forward and progress with this working group, that it's always easier to throw everything up against the wall and then see which ones stick. And so to translate that, perhaps, you know, when we go to public comment, we throw everything up on the wall and get proper community feedback on everything that's possible. And then when we receive that feedback, then we can conduct a prioritization exercise as to which ones seem the most relevant to try to narrow it down, and then just a suggestion. Thank you.
Rosemary here. I think that's an important point, Barry, and I'm the one who mostly forgets that what we're doing here is writing advice that will go to the board as background for the review team for the new GTLDs. So in that context, I think it's useful for people to understand the thinking that we've done and the reasoning behind whatever it is that we end up advising.
because it's taken us a lot of work to get to this point. So I think perhaps putting a bigger picture forward and allowing others to then review and prioritise. And this, of course, as you say, there is after our public comment period, can be part of our approach. Steve?
Thanks. I did want to make the point that it's not just cosmetics to consolidate some of the metrics under consumer trust. It's not just cosmetics. For instance, we have three items up there for UDRP, but they're really the same metrics. It's the complaints and decisions in UDRP, both in raw numbers and as a percentage of the total registered total names in the DNS. So it might be easier to phrase it this way. And I know, Barry, you put each statistic in there as an individual, but under UDRP, we might rephrase it as saying the absolute and relative quantity of complaints and decisions in UDRP. And that eliminates, that's one row which captures the essence of our need to get metrics on UDRP without having four rows, each of which makes it seem as if we have lots of metrics and invite somebody to pick and choose which ones we would take off. The same thing would be said of URSs. So at least eight of our rows are potentially consolidated down to two. And the other point I would make is that John's concerns about consumer trust, which several of us have agreed with, ought to be reflected in the matrix, because we ought to say that the survey of consumer trust, the trust survey in the sixth row, that it could include measures of consumer trust on Internet activity that goes beyond the DNS, because it's good to ask for it, but we don't want to imply that ICANN can be held accountable, the DNS manager could be held accountable of raising consumer trust in what happens online just because ICANN runs the DNS. Thank you.
Barry?
Thank you, Rosemary. I just wanted to point out real quick as well, you know, and we're also making a distinction of pre-new GTLDs and post-new GTLDs, and hence why there's a separation between the two. And I was going to point this out when we actually reviewed through the matrix, but I made a boo-boo in the fact that I delineated everything greater than 2011. And so, for example, for the quantity and percentage of UDRP decisions on rows 13 and 14, that would actually denote, on the rows 11 and 12 would be less than 2011, so that we establish some sort of baseline, and then the greater than 2011 is everything post new GTLDs. But we'll decide that later.
Thanks, Barry. Rosemary, just I wanted to respond to Steve's point. I don't think it's such a good idea to collapse things so early in our process. I think indicating the thinking and the options behind single measures would be useful to the people who are going to take our work forward. So perhaps if we could just hold that thought when we get to really considering what we want to send as our advice. Now, are there any more comments on this particular item, number three?
Rosemary, I think there is one other half of John's point, and that was with respect to distribution and malware data and those kinds of things.
Yes. I was probably off the call, Barry, when that point was being made. So perhaps if someone could step in at this point.
Hi, this is John. I thought we had moved to a point where rather than add it as a metric that we would move to cover it in the survey.
Okay.
Okay, my bad.
Steve, are you on the phone?
Yeah, John, that's what I was thinking, is that we would measure those in the survey.
Okay.
On the other hand, if Barry was about to tell us that ICANN does collect some kind of metric about stuff that happens on the Internet, it would be possible to measure before and after of that metric. Is that where you were going, Barry?
No, I spaced on that one, so I retract my statement. I'll just make a note that of what's been discussed here under the survey comments.
Cool.
Thank you. So now we move to four, which is to review Olivia's proposed user metrics, societal, spam, fraud, records, technical. Olivia, I wonder if you could just give us a quick background on this issue.
Thank you very much, Rosemary. It's Olivia for the transcript. Yes, the concern that I had whilst looking at the matrix that Barry had very kindly shared with all of us was that very few of the metrics actually included internet users that were not registrants as such. I think several of them actually, of these concerns were also shared, I guess, by John, who just mentioned them a little bit earlier. And so the number of metrics that I suggested were a little bit broader than just registrants, which really is a registrant is a subset, a very small subset of the actual internet user out there. One of the big concerns that I have is the amount of noise that we've recently heard from various segments of internet users, whether they are companies that have IP rights, or whether it is actually users that are being that are a little concerned that they will get confused later on, and also not be able to know who they deal with when they actually go on a website. It's quite a complex set of issues, and one thing that has triggered me into asking whether we could actually add these additional metrics there was that in the recent .xxx allocation, although I know the people that actually own the company, I've met them on many, many occasions, I have recently been quite enraged and unhappy about the fact that I've had several of my current domains, my company owns several domains for business purposes, and I've had advertising received from various, I don't even think they're registrars, I think they might even be just agents, saying, oh, you can now make sure that your domain name does not get used in the porn industry by making sure you block off your domain name .xxx. That is something which I personally saw as being as bringing a loss of confidence in thinking that this is running correctly. Some people might think it's totally legitimate. I don't think it is because it just doesn't demonstrate nice, pleasant practice. It seems to be more of a protection racket than anything else. So anyway, the various things that I've suggested here. The first one is societal. Societal as in the confusion induced in internet users by introduction of the new GTLDs. And this is something which I thought could be derived from a regular online opinion poll, a little bit like the survey that we just mentioned. Survey now, survey in a few years, in a year or 2 years' time. And it is true that originally people will probably get quite confused with the new extensions. But as with everything, people... users will at some point start getting used to these new extensions, and we will probably see a reduction in the societal impact. The next one is the spam. A percentage of spam connected by a honeypot using new GTLDs as a percentage of all spam received. That's the metric I think that could be used. It's something that is totally usable. I think that what we might find out is that some new GTLDs will be used quite extensively by spammers because they will be run by registrars and registries that do not enforce anything, that basically don't run their domain name system in a way that makes sure spam is reduced. Of course, some people are going to say, well, it's not their job to do so. But then, whose job is it to make sure that we don't get so much spam in our mailboxes? So then the next one is fraud. Again, same thing as with spam. Some new GTLDs might be used primarily by people committing fraud or will have a high instance of domain names used for fraudulently and for fraudulent purposes. Same thing also with regards to the Whois records, percentage of invalid or suspect Whois records in each new GTLD. I'm not quite sure whether, well, I guess the whole group must have recently read some of the comments, or should I say criticism, from various organizations, including the FTC, that basically points the finger at Whois being an absolute mess today. With the few registries and registrars that ICANN has to deal with. And question being, when there will be hundreds of new GTLDs, some even say thousands of new GTLDs, so thousands of new potential registries, and I guess maybe tens of thousands, who knows how many registrars that will be there, how in the world are we going to be able to get Whois records to be accurate? And then finally, the last one is a technical metric, a whole set of metrics about the actual cleanliness of the new GTLD zones. I think this is something that's already included in some of our metrics, because we actually ask the registries to make sure that the zone is clean. But it might be something that we run some kind of worm on the second level. Having had some work, having done some work in cleanliness of the DNS, it often is problems like semicolons instead of a dot, commas in domain names, this sort of thing that just basically makes a certain percentage, between 6% and 10% in general, of a zone totally unusable, because the second level domains are just not working in there. So these are the set of metrics that I suggested, and now I guess it's open to discussion. Thank you, Rosemary.
Thank you, Olivier. I have Wendy and Steve in the queue. So, Wendy?
Thank you. This is Wendy. It's gotten to the point in this conversation where I feel compelled to repeat my feeling that if something can't be misused, it also can't be used in all sorts of unexpected but productive ways. And therefore, I hear a lot of the metrics that Olivier is proposing as requiring constraint on what Jonathan Zittrain would call the generativity, what I would call simply the general purpose nature of the DNS. While I don't think spam per se is a good thing, I think a system that is incapable of being used for spam is less useful than one that is open to whatever use someone would throw at it. So I go back to my earlier concern that we carefully distinguish between descriptive and normative statements here, and as we go too far into constraining what can be done with the DNS in purporting to measure trust, I think that we are going down the wrong path. I would object to the inclusion of any except perhaps the technical elements of Olivier's suggestions.
Thanks, Wendy. Steve?
Thanks, Steve Del Bianco. Olivier, I'm interested to know, with Barry's help, whether some of these proposed metrics are already captured in row 10. Row 10 is quantity of breach notice violations for registrar agreements. And again, the RAA, the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, is undergoing a change. For instance, the first one you mentioned, Olivier, the notion of somebody saying to you, you'd better reserve your names in .XXX, that, I believe, has been studied for 2 years at ICANN in a working group in the GNSO called the Cross TLD Registration Scam. It was part of the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group, or RAP. And it even has a name, right? The Cross TLD Registration Scam that you received. And I'd look for Barry to clarify whether, if a registrar, which is one of the contract parties, registrar reseller, one of the parties that ICANN has jurisdiction over, if one of those parties is judged to have done the cross-TLD registration scam. Will that show up as a breach notice in the measure we already have in under Row 10 for the RAA? And Barry, you could shed some light on that, and then I wanted to speak to the who is accuracy concern.
Thanks, Steve. This is Barry. Having identified that as an issue in the RAP working group, the only thing I can point out is that it's still under review. From the Dakar session, there was some positive light shed on the issue from a country code perspective and some of their dealings with it. And just recently at the latest GNSO council meeting, they approved continued dialogue with the country code group so that we can better understand the issue. It's unclear at this time if, in fact, these are accredited parties that are involved in these scams, and at which I think still warrants a lot more data collection before any kind of PDP or something could be put together to take it to home. But it's definitely one of those things, and I think I agree with you in general that if any one of these five that are proposed here are somehow directly attached to provisions in the RAA, then yes, they should show up as breach notices. What I can't provide for you right now is, for instance, spam is quite a prevalent provision within many of the agreements, both the RAA and I believe practically is a whole boatload of the registration agreements, which are somewhat outside of the scope of ICANN. I don't know what percentage of those have actually ever showed up as breach. Spam is very prevalent in agreements out there, but we still have a lot of spam. So,
okay, Barry, thank you for that. Then I would recommend that next to the row that says breach notices of registrar agreements, either the note to the far right or something below it should indicate cross-TLD registration scam by registrars and resellers, because I don't want to just assume that will be a breach notice. It's a measurable metric of activity of one of the contract parties that ICANN has to manage, and ICANN has to manage compliance for. So, Olivier, that is a good one, not if it's conducted by your average Joe on the street, but if it's done by an ICANN contract party like a registrar or reseller. And I think the same could be said of who is accuracy, because, again, that is an ICANN compliance party issue. And, Barry, is who is accuracy findings, those that are done through complaints and subsequent complaint follow-up by the compliance department. Does failure to address who is accuracy result in a registrar receiving a breach notice?
This is Barry. I'll have to go back to the compliance team to understand the details. I'm not 100% familiar with everything that is being reported and recorded and taking it through the entire breach notification process. So I'll take that as an action to understand what some of their other metrics and how they're addressing it.
So, and finally, I would just say to Olivier, you can see that I fully support trying to hold ICANN to goals that get to consumer trust, but I am trying to focus off on things that we can measure that are violations of agreements that we have with the people that ICANN can control.
Thanks, Steve. Rosemary here. I think the last 2 points, 3 and 4, has raised an important issue that when other people look at our work, they may come with a much broader brief than we actually have. So when we pull our work together, I think we're going to have to be very clear that in the, if you like, the ecosystem of the internet, our focus is on ICANN's management of the domain name system and the contribution that that task, if well done, can make to consumer trust, consumer confidence, and choice. And in that context, our recommendations go to measures which will allow, firstly, clarity on what's happening with the management of that task in the context of the new GTLDs, and that clarity may then resolve into some further work for other groups, looking at how performance can be improved. But this issue of being very clear about the scope of this task when we present our work to other people, I think is a really important issue. And as we've just seen in the discussion on 3 and 4, there are contributions that ICANN's work in the domain name space can make to these very broad issues that have been raised, but those contributions are not the total answer. So that's just my own reflections on this. Now we're going, I think, if there's nothing more on 4, Olivier?
Thank you very much, Rosemary. Just a comment on Steve Del Bianco's comments with regards to fraud or spam not being within scope. I do agree in some sense that, yes, we are pulling the we are going a little further than the ICANN scope as such in looking at overall consequences of the new GTLD process being launched. We're not looking at whether ICANN is doing the job that it's trying to do. What we're doing here is to find out the actual, or what I'm suggesting is that we're doing, is to find out the actual effects that the launch of the new GTLDs will have on the overall internet. And that is a set of metrics that if we don't do ourselves, will be done elsewhere. And I'm concerned that if those metrics are done elsewhere, they will be used against ICANN rather than being used by ICANN to make its processes better.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's useful background on that point. So I think now we'll move to point 5, which is to review the second version of our matrix. So are you able to put that up on the screen, Barry?
I'm sorry, I was on mute. This is Barry. I'll try putting it up. I don't believe that it, again, Adobe Connect doesn't really warrant or work very well with spreadsheets, so if people can, I recommend you have it up on your screen, and when I talk through it, I'll be sure just to call out the row and column for which we're referencing. But let me start the share.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, it should be sharing. How well is that viewable?
Well, I think it varies, Rosemary here. It's better looking at this than the letter. So it's bearably viewable, if that's a category.
Is there anyone on the call who's relying on the Adobe and doesn't have Excel open?
If the answer was yes, Steve, what would you say next?
Then I would recommend Barry expand the Zoom on the Adobe window. But we don't need to focus on the Adobe window if everybody has Excel open, where it's much easier to work with.
Okay, I think we're right. So Barry, if you could take us through this.
Okay. This version has changed quite a bit since the last one from our
previous meeting 2 weeks ago. I think before I go into the details of what of each measure, I probably ought to list, you know, real quick some of the main items that I changed, and then from there we can start to review through some of the metrics. And I did send this out on the December 12th, kind of a bulleted item of some of the major changes. And I'll just walk through those, and if anybody has a quick question or response, just raise your hand and I'll try to respond to those. So from version 2, created a title page, whoop-de-doo. Second bullet incorporated the definitions into column B. So I think from our previous call, or definitely from the previous version, I had the definitions on a different tab. And instead of them being on a different tab, I moved them over into column B. That way they're a little, it's more easily referable as you're looking at each individual metric. Now, there was one component of the reason why I didn't do this, or there was one action that I didn't do because I was having a little difficulty assigning sections of a particular definition to each metric, and I believe it was Wendy and Rosemary that were trying to bring this up. So as an example, and I think Steve touched on a little bit in the call today, is that you know, looking at the definition refers to the confidence registrants and users can have in the consistency of name resolution, which would kind of apply to the first four of service availability and uptime and those kinds of things, whereas on the degree of confidence among registrants and users that the TLD registry operator is fulfilling its proposed purpose and complying with applicable laws. At any rate, my point is I had a difficult time trying to dissect a definition and assign it to each metric. And when we go, if we feel that that exercise is still warranted, as we go through each particular line item, I would ask for assistance from the working group for what they feel, what section of the definition should be assigned to that. And then on the next version, I can incorporate that in. Next, basically, I had from our please, Steve, go ahead.
If you were to assign the definitional segment to a given row, we would need a shorthand for that. For instance, your category of SLA or service level agreement is almost shorthand for the first half of the consumer trust definition, percentage of uptime. The rest of them are more about fulfilling their contract and adhering to policies and laws. So we would need some sort of shorthand way of abbreviating the part of the definition, since I'm pretty sure we don't want to paste entire sentences in on every single row to show which part of the definition it relates to. So I'd invite you to try to find a shorthand way of doing it.
Yes, thank you. And that was kind of my reasoning for creating column D to begin with. So I'm open to suggestions on what those shorthands might be. And again, I think if when we go to review each one of these individually, we'll keep that in mind and try to determine what those shorthands are, if that's okay.
Yes, that's good.
Okay, the next couple of things, I modified the definition of consumer to include potential internet users. So in cell Bravo 3, consumer, the original definition was internet users and registrants. And then we had our discussion about potential internet users as a footnote, and then I think we had finalized on just potential internet users and registrants. But then when I was actually putting the putting pen to paper, so to speak, just only including potential internet users seemed to omit internet users. And so now we have what we have here, internet users, potential internet users, and registrants. And is that what was agreed upon by the working group?
Steve here?
Yes, Steve.
I don't clearly recall the exact consensus we arrived at last time, but if we're expanding beyond just present and actual to potential, there's no reason to limit it just to the users, because potential registrants would have just as much interest in the new GTLD program as actual registrants today. Just like potential users are worried about consumer trust, and they might have interest just like actual users. So as a proposal, we might say actual and potential internet users and registrants. Thank you.
Yes, I think that's a good suggestion, because I was grappling with the same point. Sorry, Rosemary here. If we've got actual and potential internet users, but we've only got actual registrants, then we're limiting the scope. So I think Steve's suggested words in the chat area are a good way of dealing with this issue. Back to you, Barry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Rosemary. And I guess, does anybody disagree on the phone with this change?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thank you. Next item is modify the definition of competition to clearly state GTLD streams. And on this one, again, I think with respect to our conversation about registry operators versus registry service providers, and then in reference back to our definition of competition, our original definition just had GTLD, and it was agreed upon by the group that we would qualify it further with GTLD streams, GTLD registry operators, and registrars. And if there's any objection to that change, then please note so. Okay. The next change is we added comments to F2 and G2 to define obtainable versus reportable. I think, Steve, you had mentioned what what they were actually defined for, and what I tried to do here was just to include in the comments, and certainly we'll be sure to incorporate this in an explanation of how to navigate the matrix within the advice letter, but for now, what I've come up with, and I'm definitely open to suggestions, obtainable means how easily or difficult it will be to obtain the data and or metric from the designated source. And that's classified as easy, moderate, difficult, or doubtful. And the equivalent for reportable is how easily or difficult it will be to construct a meaningful report of the data and or metric collected from that data designated source with the same spectrum, easy, moderate, or difficult, and doubtful. So if that's still not clear, I'm certainly open to more suggestions.
Seems pretty clear.
Yeah, I think that's good, Barry.
Okay, great. Thank you. Next change, rows 4, 5, and 6 were to expand registry service level agreements, or I think we originally just had percentage uptime of registry and registrar. We now have four metrics. I pulled these three and expanded from the proposed registry agreement for the new GTLD program, and specifically they call out DNS, RDDS, which is the who is, and EPP, service availability. Over in the comments section have the proposed SLA that was defined in the contract. And for the percent uptime of registrar, for presently, the RAA does not have any specific systems service level agreements, even with respect to who is. This is why it's classified as difficult, because ICANN does not collect that data at the present time. So we can expand on that one when we address it in detail. Steve, please.
Thanks. Barry, would both of these measures, the RDDS and the EPP, are those things that registries provide to registrars?
They also provide it to ICANN on a monthly basis,
Oh, sure. They provide the statistics, but the services themselves are provided in real time by registries to registrars.
Yes.
Okay. And so, therefore, we haven't indicated on here, but what I'm pretty sure what Wendy wants to get at is we would measure these two SLA performance measures for the new TLD operators versus the total population, or perhaps versus the existing TLD operators. Because, again, we're trying to assess the new GTLD program. So both the RDDS and EPP performance is a measure of just the new TLD registries that are up and running. And if Wendy's still with us, you can weigh in on what you were thinking with respect to that. Thank you.
This is Wendy, and I'm not recalling that I had a specific comment there.
This is Barry. I concur with that. And it, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but what you're pointing to is the existing Gs today are operating at certain percentage SLAs, and of course their registry agreements have like service level agreements applied within the contract that they report to ICANN, and versus the new pool of generic top level domains that get 2013 and beyond will have the same exact systems while probably classified differently. You know, there's definitely pure language in the new guidebook that says these are the five registry critical systems. But I think with respect to trying to compare pre versus post, it's all about just meeting the service level. And so if these numbers that are reported to ICANN, for instance, with RDDS show up at 97%, I'm not sure I understand the connection to whether it's they provide the registry services in real time to registrars or not. At the end of the month when they report their metric to ICANN, if they miss that availability, there will be a red flag against it.
Well, what I was getting at is it may not be sufficient to measure simply binary at the end of a month to say did they or did they not meet their SLA. If you're collecting the statistic on what their actual percentage of uptime is, we would compare that to the same month for the old existing TLDs and not worry about before and after, because it's really just a relative comparison in real time between the new operators and the existing operators.
Okay, understood. This is Barry. Understood. But is it a fair comparison? The services are the same, but at the root of this is it's still the system availability, and we may not necessarily be comparing like for like systems.
How would it be different if .web comes up in February of 2013? We would measure its percentage uptime at offering RDDS and EPP to all those registrars that are out there trying to give people new names that end in .web. And we'd compare their uptime percentage for the month of March against the same month for other TLDs like .org, .com, .net. I do think that's a relevant, and the reason I defer to Wendy is that this all hinges off the first half of our consumer trust definition. And, Wendy, that was something that you wanted in there to sort of measure their ability to provide consistent and reliable registrations and resolution.
Okay. And I'll just rebut one more, and then I can go either way. The reason why I say that it may not be like for like is the new .web registry services environment could be the latest and greatest version versus the .name environment, as an example, or .com or whichever, that may be two or three revs behind on EPP or DNS and or who is. So that's why I'm kind of concerned that it's not necessarily like for like. But, again, I can go either way. But I tell you what, we'll chew on this one a little bit longer, especially when we start to walk through these on a line by item. I'd like to get through some of the
we only have 27 minutes left. I'd like to get through the changes, and hopefully we can at least start on a few of these individuals. Any other comments? Go ahead, Steve.
Wasn't me.
It was Rosemary, Barry. I was just going to suggest that perhaps on this call, perhaps if we just, as you have just suggested, make a list of items that people want to come back to for discussion so that we get through all the changes this time and then we can have a look at the issues next time. Pardon me. Back to
you,
Barry.
Thank you. So the next change was rows 9 and 10 was with respect to the quantity of violations, which used to be just quantity violations of registry agreements, and then further delineating between breach notices. Since the previous call, I did have a small email dialogue with the compliance team, and I have a process that was defined that I can't necessarily share at this moment, but I can speak to it real quick. Essentially, there's a standard compliance approach, and within this overall process, there are two phases. The first phase is what has been defined as prevention, and within prevention, they have the first inquiry of a breach, a second inquiry, and a final inquiry. If upon the final inquiry, it will kick over into the second branch, which is defined as the enforcement notice. And so this sub-process within enforcement is delineated between the breach notice actually being sent and if certain criteria are not met to fix the specific breach, then the suspension, termination, or non-renewal would follow from that point forward. Now, this is just a standard process for each type of breach may be a little bit more unique from one to the next. For instance, if it's a UDRP version versus a WHOIS compliance issue for accessibility and those things. At the current time, we don't have details of each of those particular types of breach, but the compliance team is working on that, and as they flesh out those individual processes, I'll be looking for them as well. And per Steve's comment on the chat suggests that the first breach notice is the state we want to measure, which, if I recall, is basically the enforcement bucket, and that's definitely the more formalized, publicly posted so-and-so has breached, and I would agree with that as well. Okay, any comments on that little dialogue there? Okay, next change. Row 28 is statistical measure of diversity as a placeholder until we determine its inclusion or not. So basically, we have on row 28, under consumer choice, I added this as a placeholder until we get more information back. I can't remember her name off the top of my head. But those are two open action items that when we get more information, at which point we'll make a determination whether this will belong under this bucket or not belong at all. Next item is rows 33 and 34. We changed backend operators to registry service providers. I think everybody agreed with that. Rows 39 through 42, I did add pricing as a function of competition, and that is also an open action item, and we're waiting on a response from ICANN Legal about what they think about the acquisition of that data. Then rows 43 added a placeholder for John Berard's, which we've reviewed and would probably be a function of consumer trust under the trust survey, and I added that as a comment over here. Rows 44 through 48 is a placeholder for Olivier's suggestions, and I think that that's still half and half. I'm going to keep these as placeholders down here until we review through each individual metric, and if we happen to agree that there's a home with them, then we'll move them where appropriately. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, created a new measures pivot tab. And again, so pivot tables are a really easy way to compare certain sets of data. And the only idea behind this is just so that we can pretty much roll up in a summary view of what a particular metric may be versus its difficulty to obtain that particular metric. So as an example, for this one, I've taken account of the metrics, and we're at 40 metrics right now, and I'm comparing it by the category that we've assigned, which will, I think, evolve into the shorthand version of segments of our definitions, versus mm-hmm. whether that data or metric is obtainable, difficult, doubtful, easy, moderate. And so mm-hmm. I've sorted these by the greatest to the smallest, and moderates being our RPM shows up at the top of the list as being the most, the greatest quantity of metric, and mm-hmm. has a moderate rating of acquiring. And so, again, this is just kind of a quicker view as to see a summarization of the measures. I don't think for purposes of our advice letter anything that we'll necessarily include it. It's going to be more useful down the road when we actually start putting pen to paper with some of these metrics. So that's a review of the changes that I had from the last version. Any comments or suggestions?
Mm-hmm. Great work, Barry.
Yeah, no, it's really terrific, Barry, and I really like the that inclusion of the items under discussion still at the end of the table. It captures them clearly so that we can just figure out whether, you know, they belong or they don't belong.
You know, with respect to that, Barry, they could be moved all to the consumer trust section as opposed to the bottom of the table. It could still be TBD with respect to how we include them, but isn't it clear that all six of those are with respect to consumer trust?
This is Barry. I don't think I can fully feel like I can answer that for Olivier, but if the group seems to think that, then I'll make sure to migrate them up and just keep the TBD tag on them.
Barry, Rosemary here. I actually have a different view because I think we're not agreed about those measures. So keeping them at the bottom of the table, I think, just provides that scope for us to continue the discussion. And when we are agreed that that measure should be included, then my suggestion would be we then move it up into its relevant definition areas.
Rosemary, all I'm suggesting is that if they would ever be included, we know these six would be under consumer trust. And I was suggesting moving them there so they get discussed in the context of consumer trust, but I don't by any means mean that we've already accepted them. But we already know where they would live if they were accepted. That's all my point was.
No, I agree with, I understand that background, but I just think it's beautifully clear that these things are under discussion at the moment, being separated out in this way. And Olivia has had to go to another meeting, so he's not on the call at the moment. So I don't feel strongly if you would like to move them into the body under the definition, then I'm okay with that. Could I suggest, given that we're 10 past 8, or my time at any rate, 12 minutes past 8, that we just get Barry to explain agenda item number 6. I'm not sure what you're suggesting to us, Barry, in that context, and then we can go back into the matrix for however much time we've got left.
Thank you, Rosemary. Basically, Steve had the action item to provide a draft of material that was being used to inform the business constituency about our efforts here, and which he's done so and sent out to the list. And So this is the first draft of drafts of drafts of what our advice letter may become. And I just wanted, I included this on the agenda just to start to review it. There are basically two documents. What I have posted up now is the advice letter outline, which is just a skeleton of the contents of what this advice letter may look like. And then there's a second version that's actually filled out a little bit more, which contains the resolutions from the board and some other details. And I'll really turn it over to Steve for him to advise us as to what and how.
Rosemary, should I proceed?
Yes, please.
Great. I would have hoped to have made greater progress on the drafting of an advice letter, but as Barry indicated, I've tried to provide a six-part outline. I wanted to get everyone's input on whether we're on the right track here. The first thing I did was to look for templates for advice that had come from ALAC, CCNSO, or GNSO. And I looked high and low on the ICANN website and found only two instances of advice to the board that was labeled as such. And there was no real template that suggested it to me. I think in many cases, if GNSO adopts a resolution, they send the resolution to the board. They don't call it advice. They just sort of pass it along, and the same seemed to be true of the ALAC or the CCNSO. If anyone on the call has knowledge of an example of a good template where a letter advice was provided to the board by any of our ACSOs, could you point it out to us? And that would be perhaps a good starting point, too.
Steve, this is Barry. Actually, I may have a good example that was passed to me by Margie, which is from the REC 6 initiative a while back, which I'm unfamiliar with, but it was more of a letter format that's quite long, and I'll send that out to the list for review, and perhaps that may act as a template.
Fantastic, and hopefully that REC 6 was advice that was provided to the board pursuant to a board request or a board resolution, because that's really what we're trying to mimic here. And the four-page backgrounder I sent out was what I had been using as context or background as to how and why the board requested advice from the four ACSOs. In that document is where we probably have to address Olivier's pivotal point about scope. I know he's not with us anymore, but he was bringing up the notion that the world may want to know in the review of new GTLDs whether the new GTLDs were a good idea to begin with. Did they improve consumer trust, choice, and competition? And that is a higher-level question than the question of how well did ICANN execute the new GTLD program, right? Yeah. It becomes a question of, gosh, I wish we hadn't done it, versus, well, I think we could have done it better. Because you can't put this toothpaste back in the tube a year after the first GTLD is launched. So
that's a pivotal question
for our group, Rosemary. Go ahead.
It absolutely is. Wendy just wanted to ask a quick question. So, Wendy?
Thanks. And just a question about the framing here. Scheduled concurrently to this meeting is the cross-community working group, which has been spending a lot of time discussing what the output of groups like this is, and there it's been very clear that those have to go up through the constituent, the creating entities. I'm assuming that this would be treated similarly, and the letter would go.
Look at item 3 on my proposed structure, Wendy. And it includes not only public comment, but approval by the respective ALAC, GNSO, and CCNSO. They would have to approve this because our working group is not authorized to send anything to ICANN's board.
Right, and so I would just suggest we don't need to spend a lot of time framing the what sort of format our advice takes. If GNSO chooses when it sends things on just to send a resolution, that seems
maybe
much
format
ahead
was
as
my,
we need.
The wrong word. It was more about the structure of laying out what we set out to do, its context, how we decided to limit our scope, what process we as a working group used. That's really what 1, 2, and 3 are about.
And if I could just follow quickly
yes.
on that, I think I've seen documents from some parts of ICANN that are so overlaid with descriptions of process that you wonder whether anything of substance actually came out of them. And I would urge us not to spend the entire document talking about process.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Wendy. And process is very clear in the charter that what we're doing goes back to our respective ACSOs. And I agree completely with Wendy that we need to find, you know, some contemporary short process description in our advice, even if we then attach the entire charter and, you know, half of ICANN's documentary repository. But in our letter, you know, it should be just very short and sharp. So back to you, Steve. With, one, two, three.
You know, one of the challenges is we intend to put this out for public comment, and the consensus of this group 2 weeks ago was that the working group would post it for public comment prior to conveying it to the four respective ACSOs for their formal consideration. If we're still heading down that path, then it's essential that when it's posted as a draft advice letter for public comment, that it be posted with enough background and process, just enough, that is, so that a reader would pick it up and say, oh, I see what this is. It's pursuant to the affirmation board resolution. I see where the scope is defined.
Mm-hmm.
See how they went about doing it and where it's going to go next. So it's important to just find a way of explaining that in the minimum possible words, because this draft advice letter has to stand alone when it's posted for public comment. What do folks
yes.
think of that?
Rosemary here, I completely agree with that. I just have as a general approach, anything that's posted for public comment should not require the person who wants to comment on it to go delving around for a whole bunch of other documents. I think it should stand alone and be very clear as to purpose and scope so that people are not discouraged from giving us their views.
Wendy, with agreement with a slight twist that where things have been agreed to before and can be incorporated by reference and hyperlinks, we don't need to re-argue them. On the other hand, if we try to summarize them, we may find ourselves arguing about the accuracy of various summaries.
Yes, that's a very good point, Wendy.
So, Wendy, let me just ask you, if you get a chance to read the little four-page summary that I circulated, and if any of that is argumentative, let me know. Otherwise, I would propose that the first three pages of that be the context.
I don't believe I got a four-page summary. I got a background.
That's it. That's the background, because all that would do is fit into the context part.
Okay. The way it was headed,
And what I had in there was not only the context of where this came from and what the board asked us to do, but I did put in there the first three definitions, which don't even show up until you get to item 6 of the structure, where we get into the substance of our advice.
All right, I haven't had a chance to look at that because I didn't recognize it from its subject, but thank you, and I will.
In the middle here, Rosemary, I have aspiration and qualification, and those are stupid titles for a document. But I meant to convey that at some point in our draft advice, I want to suggest that we aspired that this document helped to create measurable metrics so that ICANN can manage to it in the new GTLD program. That's our aspiration, and the board's as well. But the qualification is that we understand that when the affirmation review team is created,
yes.
that they may not pay much attention to what we did.
Yes. Yep. No, I understand, and I'm comfortable with 4 and 5. Just on that point, back to Olivia's discussion and the question of, you know, whether to GTLD or not to GTLD. I mean, I actually think that that question has been argued extensively, and ICANN has got to a position which perhaps is not supported by all. But I wouldn't want that argument to creep back into this work. And that's where I think we do have to be very clear about the scope of this particular piece of work in the context of the internet system and a range of issues that people will prosecute in other fora. But this particular piece of work is quite specific in its scope, and I think that we really need to work very hard to make sure that our final piece of advice is focused within that scope and not kind of leaking out into all sorts of other areas.
Rosemary, if I could respond to that on behalf of Olivier. I know he's not here, but on the chat, I was letting him know that I saw what he was getting at and said to him that it's not for us to invent this or to look to what the board did. All we have to look at is the affirmation. So I went back and reread the affirmation's mandate regarding this review. The key phrase, which is on the PowerPoints that we showed in Dakar, is that ICANN will do a review that will examine the extent to which the introduction or expansion of GTLDs has promoted competition, trust, and choice.
Yes.
So he's kind of right in that the affirmation raises the question of to GTLD or not to GTLD, even though we as a working group have followed your instinct and with full agreement that we wanted to focus on things that ICANN could actually manage to. Because it's sort of beyond, you can't put that toothpaste back in the tube. We're not trying to say undo all the new GTLDs if the review comes back and says that they actually lowered consumer trust and choice.
Yeah.
Right? It's really a do a better job executing, enforce your contracts better. We're really never suggesting that you strip them out of the internet if the review comes up and says that it didn't improve things.
No, but that the work that we do, if we just stick within scope and do the measurement that we've been asked to do, if that measurement indicates that the new GTLDs are not promoting competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice, but the reverse, then that would surely be a matter for discussion within the ICANN community. That's why I think we should just be very true to our task and leave the implications of what is found for other discussion and not try and preempt any of that.
Rosemary, this is Steve. To put a finer point on this, though, the affirmation raised the bigger question, but our group chose a narrower scope. We chose a scope that was just the stuff that ICANN controls through its contracts. So that's a choice we made, and I hope that we can stick to it as well. I just wanted to reveal that that's not necessarily something that the affirmation restricted us to.
Do you know what? Out of this discussion, Rosemary here, I wonder if at the next meeting it might be useful to start the meeting by going right back to the beginning and just reviewing our interpretation of the work now that we've been working at it for some number of months to just confirm our direction. That need not take very long, and we could probably use the slides from Dakar. But sometimes when you get lost in the long grass, it's useful to just come back and have a check of the actual requirements. So is everyone happy if we list that for the next meeting, just to start the meeting with that review?
Yes.
Great. Now, so what we need to do in regard to number six is to have a look at Steve's work and then go back to Steve with any suggestions at this framework level, not the detail of what we're going to say, but at this framework level. Is that what would be helpful, Steve?
I would actually welcome input now on that structure. And if the structure is acceptable, I guess I would do what I promised to do you know, a week and a half ago, which was to start to actually draft it. I would jam into number one the context, just three of the first four pages of the backgrounder, and then I'd try to write some prose with placeholders that fits this structure. Mm-hmm. But I didn't want to begin to write too much without agreement on what the structure would look like.
So we've got the context, the community, the process, why we're doing this in the first place, the fact that we understand this is a piece of advice that's going to be at the beginning of another process, and then our actual advice. Just on a personal basis, I'm comfortable with that structure. Are there any other comments from the group? Or any advice from Barry?
Rosemary, this is Barry. Like I said, I'll send out that Rec 6 letter that was given to the GNSO Council a while back for Steve's input into that as well.
That would be helpful.
But, Barry, that was advice from the GAC to GNSO, or was it from GNSO to the board?
In all honesty, I haven't really looked at it. Margie had sent it to me as a suggestion for an outline, for a possible outline for a letter.
We'll have to look at that because GAC advice letters are very, very scant on establishing the basis, the context, and the process because the GAC doesn't have any need to do any of that. That's why I didn't think a GAC template was a good one to follow.
Steve, Wendy in the chat is just saying that she sees the document as a two-page document. I also see it as a two-page document, not a four-page document. So could you just check that we've got the right document?
I will right now.
Okay. Scrolling. That's the one Wendy and I have got. Oh, it says it's four pages, but we only see two. There may have been some introductory pages for your stakeholder group, perhaps.
Yeah, you guys are absolutely right. I printed it twice, so I'm sitting here looking at four pages. No, it's only two. Sorry about that.
Okay. Well, at least we've all got the right document. And it's now 8:30. So we need to wrap up pretty quickly. So we come back to the matrix next meeting. We'll review, we've given Steve support to go forward with the advice letter draft. Is there any other business very quickly?
Yes, Rosemary, this is Barry. So I'm looking on the calendar, and it looks like the most logical next date for our meeting will be January 10th at the same time. I'm assuming that will be acceptable.
Yes, that's fine. I'll be in Hong Kong, so I'll need a call out, but I'll let you know about that.
So I apologize in advance. I won't be at that meeting.
Works for me.
And I think what I'll do, a second follow-up question, is I'm going to go ahead and send out a proposed meeting schedule for the 24th, February 7th, 21st, et cetera. I just want to reconfirm, we still want to meet every other week, and it seems we've been consistently meeting for 90 minutes, so I'll be sure to communicate that these are 90-minute meetings as well.
Agreed.
Yes, Barry, that seems to be where we're at, 90 minutes every fortnight.
And something that I don't have off of the top of my head is what due dates do we have for any of this, or what targets are we aiming for?
Gosh, I think we're probably trying to get ourselves in good shape for the next ICANN meeting because the due dates are way past in terms of the initial resolution.
So kind of thumbing it in the wind right now, maybe target February 7th that we have the draft advice letter and metrics ready for public comment so that gives about just over a month of public comment just prior to the Costa Rica meeting.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
Yep, that makes sense to me too.
Okay, I'll be sure to include that in the longer-term schedule so that kind of gives a heads up.
Yes, that's good. Okay. Well, I think we're there.
Great. Just to close up, I'll send out all the updated action items, the next rough agenda, and post that all into the wiki. And sometime later this week, I'll send out the next version of the matrix as well.
You're the best, Barry. Hey, everybody. Have a great holiday. And thanks for all the work people are putting into this.
Yeah, no, it's really been a great group and a great year. So have a terrific break, everybody, and we'll be back on track 10th of January.
Great.
All right, good holidays, all.
Bye.